Blog Talk Radio. Hello, and thank you for joining me for another episode of the Growing Up Chaotic Show, the show that provides a 360-degree view on all topics related to addiction, recovery, domestic violence, and mental illness. I am your host, Dawn Clancy. According to SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, nearly 24.6 million Americans were illicit drug users in 2013. Now, just for a moment, take that number and try to imagine the number of people that were impacted by that illicit drug use. Think about the families. Think about the number of mothers, fathers, cousins, grandfathers, coworkers, and best friends. Think about all the people that were pulled into and torn apart by the vicious cycle of addiction. Clearly, the numbers are staggering, and the heartache is real, and we need to start talking about it. That's why I've created the Sibling Project, exploring how the lives of siblings are impacted by addiction. Over the next several weeks, I will be speaking one-on-one with a group whose voice we rarely, if ever, get to hear, the siblings of addicts and alcoholics. It is my hope with this series of podcasts that we can spark a new conversation that focuses on the countless number of siblings living and struggling alongside an addicted loved one. Joining us for the third episode of the Sibling Project, I have sisters Myrna and Linda. Hailing from a family of eight, Myrna and Linda lost one of their sisters to an alcohol-influenced suicide. These two are no strangers to the chaos of addiction, as both of their parents were alcoholics as well. So let's welcome Myrna and Linda. Thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. All right, so Myrna, I wanted to go ahead and start with you just to get an idea, the background of your family.
Mm-hmm. Well, I come from a family of eight, like I said. My mom and dad were both alcoholics, although my dad did go into recovery when I was about 8 years old. My mother continued her alcoholism and basically a year before she died in 1997 of cancer. And my father passed away prior to that, and that was also the same year that my sister committed suicide. She actually drank my mother's morphine while she was under the influence of alcohol in that year, a month before my mom passed away. So it's been quite a long road.
Mm-hmm. So, Linda, tell me about what it was like to grow up with two alcoholic parents.
Very chaotic. Like, it was like always there was always confusion. We never knew what was going on and who was going to be in our house and all kinds of stuff like that. We had uncles, all kinds of uncles, aunties. We didn't even know who they were. And they, a lot of them weren't related to our family. But these were drinking people that came home with our parents, and a lot of them sexually assaulted us, you know, under the guise of being uncles. And that's the part of growing up that I remember the most, is all the sexual abuse that was going on. And it was quite prevalent in the whole family. It just wasn't our family. And it was the alcohol that was causing it all.
Right. Now, Linda, you're the oldest, right?
Yeah, I am.
So did you feel any pressure to step in and be like the mom or a parental figure to the rest of your siblings because you were the oldest?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I still suffer from that today. I still try and be like a mom. I know I'm not their mom, but I started looking after my brothers and sisters when I was about eight. My youngest brother was only 7 or 8 months old, and I started looking after my family then. And I've always looked after my family, or I thought I was looking after them. But all I was doing was not having to look at my own problems while I was helping them. And I didn't realize I had a lot of problems. But it was really, yeah, being the mother of eight kids, is like, or seven other kids, and then having to look after your mom on top. It wasn't fun, not at all.
It's a huge responsibility. I mean, you grow up, and I mean, I'm sure you did too, Myrna, growing up with alcoholic parents and all that chaos. You have to grow up a lot faster than you should have to.
Absolutely. I feel that Linda is like a mother figure to myself, and her and I, we have four other sisters, well, the one that passed plus other ones. I feel like I was her helper. Throughout my whole life, I overachieve, over responsibility, trying to be the peacemaker in my family. That's the result of growing up in this chaos. Was my job then became how to stop the chaos. I actually believed for years and years that I could, and it's been in the last 20 years that I've figured out that it was an impossible task for anyone, let alone a child or a young woman. It's just not going to happen.
Right. So then tell me about your sister that unfortunately passed from addiction. Did she have a problem that started when she was younger? Where was she in your family?
Annette was my older sister by 1 year, and she actually started very young with the drinking. She was like a teenager of maybe 14 years old, I believe, the first time that she got inebriated when she started falling. And from there, it just never stopped. So her life revolved around alcohol. She had three children. She did get married. She did actually try to hold her life together when she was about 18, 19, she met a man that she totally loved, and that didn't last very long, about 3 or 4 years. So by the time she was 24, she was a full-blown alcoholic. She couldn't function, and she had on numerous occasions tried to suicide. And only when she was drunk. So the whole family then became hyper-vigilant for Annette. Like if we didn't hear from her or see her or her children, because they were young at that time, somebody would always have to go searching out Annette, because this was her way of coping with the upbringing that we had and the pain that she herself experienced, was to turn to alcohol. Mm. And then, you know, so we went from caring about our parents to caring about our siblings. Like it was just a big circle. And now today, we also have other siblings that are alcoholics, into drugs, and that are still in the cycle.
And then watching the new generations come up, for me, it's really hard, because I could see where, when I was a child, I seen the drinking and I seen what it done. So I swore up and down and every which way but sideways that I would never become a drunk. And I never did. But I'm a full-blown drug addict. So I don't know what I traded off, if I made any better decision. But I do know I'm not an alcoholic. But I am a drug addict.
Right.
And for some reason, that to me is significant. Because of what alcohol has done to my family. It's torn my family right apart. Mm-hmm. Right from the oldest right through to the youngest one. And it's still going on today. With the younger nieces and my great-nephews. Like, it's like a never-ending problem. Like, you know what I mean? It's really hard to live like this. Or to live with it.
Right, and I think I know from my own experience, when you get to that point where you just, you realize that you can't do anything for this person, you can't stop them from using, you can't stop them from destroying their lives, and you have to love them, but you also have to keep your distance and set boundaries, that can be the hardest thing to do because you love this person. They are your family. They're your sister, your brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so true. You know, it's really true to set the boundaries because you cross them all the time. You're so used to it as a child. We're an unusually close family because, I think, of the alcoholism and the chaos that was going on as children. We sort of all gathered together and we watch each other to make sure that none of us is going off on the deep end. But even when we see each other going off on the deep end, we can't stop it. And it gets frustrated and you just want to stop. Like, I see the chaos going around me now. It brings me right back to when I was a kid and I couldn't do anything then. And I can't do anything now. That's really a helpless feeling. Not to be able to help them.
And I think probably, Linda, I mean, being the oldest and, you know, taking on all of this responsibility, it must be especially hard for you because you probably go back into that caretaker mode.
All the time. All the time. I try not to. But sometimes I can and sometimes I can't. You know, and the times that I can't are the worst for me because I know inside that I'm not doing the right thing. But then I think, well, okay, it's not right for this moment, but it'll be okay for now. It'll fix things. But it never does, and I keep making that same mistake over and over again. And I don't think it's a mistake. It's just because I got this crazy sense of responsibility toward them. I don't think I'll ever outgrow it because I don't even feel this responsible toward my own children, which really confuses me. These are my brothers and sisters, but I seem to worry more about their problem than my children's. Because I have two children, too, that are alcoholics.
Wow.
And I can't deal with my son at all. At all. I've just come to the realization that I can't help him.
Right.
He's going to have to want to help himself.
You know, I mean, I can't help but feel like maybe we are all related, three of us.
Yes, we are.
I'm related by one problem.
I feel like, you know, I must be related to these ladies somehow because this sounds like my family.
Yeah. No, and as for me, I'm a little further down the road. I've done the last, like, Annette's suicide put me on a path of peace. I decided then that I would not continue the cycle with myself and that I was going to find how to find peace in my life, and I was going to make peace with the rest of my family because losing my sister was devastating.
What frustrated you the most about Annette's addiction? It sounds like you said, you guys are close. I'm sure you probably tried to intervene many times. So after, when she passed away, like, what frustrated you the most about that? Did you feel helpless?
Absolutely. What frustrated me the most, and this is very emotional for me, is that I loved her. Very, very much, as the rest of my siblings. And the fact that she did not know that, that's what frustrated me. She did not know how much I loved her. And I decided at that point, the rest of my siblings, wherever they were in their lives, however they were, that it was important for me to let them know that I loved them. Regardless of the decisions, regardless of the mistakes they've made in their lives, because none of us are perfect. And growing up the way that we did, it's a miracle that we lost only one sister. because there's other members extended that have lost many more siblings. So for me, it was the thing that angered me was that she did not know how much I loved her and how much she was loved. She just, that was the big thing. Same with her addiction, trying to help her out of the addiction. She just didn't believe that.
Mm-hmm. No, I just thank you for sharing so honestly. You're both amazing, and I know this isn't easy to talk about, but I know that this conversation is going to help other people. So I just want to make sure I say it again, that I completely appreciate and just am so grateful that I can speak to you two ladies and learn more about your family. It's so important. Now, Linda, I know that you're also in recovery.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get a little bit of what your active addiction was like for you. And then, Myrna, I kind of want to get your reaction to Linda's addiction. But let's start with Linda first.
My addiction took me down a road I never, ever thought I'd go. Took me to places I didn't want to go. I actually sold myself. I became a prostitute. And I was with people that didn't know what life was about, and I didn't either. Once I started doing crack, that was all that mattered to me. My family, my children, nothing of that mattered. All that mattered was getting high. And the more I got high, the worse my family bugged me about it, and that was all I wanted them to say was, just leave me alone. Let me do what I'm doing. I'm not hurting anybody. But I didn't know it at the time, but I was. I was hurting one of the most important people in my life, me. And when I was in the crack addiction actively, Myrna tried helping me. She gave me a home. She helped me so much. But I just took all of that and threw it back at her face because I was a crackhead and nothing was going to stop me. I was out to do myself in. And then when I got ill, I had a really serious illness. I had a flesh eating disease on my foot because a cat had bit me, and I never took care of it. So I got a really bad infection. I was in the hospital for 6 months almost. And in that time, I know I had a conversation with God because I was even smoking crack in the hospital.
How did you do that?
You know what I'm saying? I was doing that, and one day I just asked God to help me, and I really threw down and said, that's it, I can't do this no more. I cannot. Either I do it or I'm dead. And I went to sleep for 3 days, and I woke up, and I was straight, and I've been straight ever since. Myrna and I have a little discussion on how long I've been straight, but I do know I've been straight over 7 years.
Oh, wow.
And I've never backslid, although there had been times where I thought, Jesus, my life was so much better before. But it wasn't. All I know is that you can recover from that drug addiction. You know, you can. I know I can. I did it.
Right.
And I know it's possible, but it takes lots of work and lots of knowing that you're worth it. Because I know I'm worth it. My family shows me every day that I'm worth it. Now that I'm recovered and straight and in recovery, yeah, my family shows me. They tell me every day that it's a good thing. I see that it's a good thing. I don't see any other crackheads in my family. Because if I had stayed on that road, I'm sure there would be a couple of them in my family. But there aren't. And I thank myself for that one, that there aren't any crackheads here.
Right.
I hope me stopping, when I did, stopped some of them. Because it's really a rough addiction to survive from. Because all you want to do is just get high. And it's not fun after a while.
Right.
It's not fun at all.
Now, Myrna, I know Linda had mentioned that you had helped her quite a bit.
Yes.
After Linda got sober, as she started her recovery, did you have difficulty trusting her, or what were like the main issues that you had?
Yeah, absolutely. Trusting her, believing her. And I think I would look at her because I could tell when she was under the influence of crack. And for a long time, I looked at her very carefully, making sure that she wasn't under the influence. And, you know, that was difficult to try and repair the relationship, because while she was under the influence of crack, she did a lot of things that I didn't really appreciate in my life. However, back to Annette, it was Annette's suicide that allowed me to have some compassion and empathy for my sister, and I had to make peace. My mission was peace and love her where she was, which was in an active crack addiction, and that was hard. But like Linda, you know, I turned to God, and I felt that God wanted me to have peace in my life, and that he helped me to have acceptance as well for myself, because I don't have drug or alcohol addictions. I'm probably the world's best control freak, but I don't have addictions. I'm a control freak. However, but I had to make peace, and I had to make peace with Linda, because I saw Linda dying before me. Before my eyes, I was losing another sister, and I don't know how many times I had said that to myself, God, why am I losing another sister? I don't want to lose any sisters. However, I made peace with it, and I told her I had done a lot of stuff, and finally I just said to her, you know, Linda, Annette died not knowing that I loved her, but I want you to know right where you are today. I believe I was picking her up from a hotel and a binge, and she had almost died. And I said, I want you to know that I love you. And whether you kick this addiction or not, please don't leave the world without knowing that I love you. And that was what kept me able to stay beside her and to not judge her and to be helpful to her, is because it was important that she know I love her. But because Annette didn't. Annette left this world not feeling loved. I couldn't do that to any of my siblings ever again. Even my father, when he died, he didn't know that I loved him. My mother knew that I loved her. I was able to make peace with my mom, and it started with my mom, and then it had to go to Annette. But that was the thing. Like, the hardest thing when dealing with Linda's addiction was trying to get her to trust me that I was there to help and not to judge her.
Right.
Yeah.
Linda, was it possible for you to believe Myrna when she would say that to you? Like, I love you right
and
as
not
you
at
are.
First. Not at first, no. I thought it was just a ploy, something to, you know, get me, well, I love you, Linda. You better smarten up type thing. But after a while, I realized that my sister sincerely meant it. And I sincerely mean it when I love her, and I say I love her. And I love my brothers, and I've come to a point with my brothers where if they die through alcoholism, that's too bad, but they're not taking me with them. You know, I quit drinking. Totally. I'm not going to drink ever again. Maybe if I do, it's, you know, it's okay, but I don't have a problem with alcohol. But I know my family does. And for me to bring it around them is like bringing poison. So I'm trying not to. And like my sister helped me so much. Not only Myrna, all of my sisters did. Mm. Even Annette. When she died, she left this world thinking I hated her too. And I loved my sister. She thought I hated her, but I couldn't live with her alcohol. I seen what it was doing, and I just didn't know how to place it, word it to her that it was bad. All I did was come down like a tyrant, screaming and hollering. That doesn't help anybody, not even me. So Myrna's taught me some patience.
Yeah.
Some patience. I still lose it. We got into a little to-do yesterday about how long I had been straight, and I got all peeved. because I figured, who are you telling me what I am? But then when I calm down and think about it, yeah, she'd know. She was straight longer than I have been.
Yeah, she was so fun.
Yeah. Being the sober one, and I really am in our family of eight. I am the I'm the peacemaker. I'm the sober one.
Yeah.
I've for years had survivor guilt.
I was just going to ask
very isolated. Yeah, feeling very isolated. You know, in my family because I am different. You know, and I don't think that I'm that much different. I just think that from the chaos, I took a different path. Ran my life as well into different places, not into addiction, but like I say, the controlling, the control. I'm very controlling. I have everything in my life just right, so you know, and that's hard to live up to. I imagine that's how an addiction runs your life as well. You know,
God, you live for your addiction.
Like I can relate to wanting to have a drink, but I can relate into wanting to have everything in order. You know, so that I don't feel thrown back into the chaos of my childhood. I spend all my time, you know, trying to not go there.
No, Myrna, I can totally understand that because I'm the same exact way. I'm like the normie. I'm the clean one in my family. And today, I grew up in an environment where everything was always a mess. There was always beer everywhere, just blood and just craziness. So now today
God,
in my
yeah.
house, everything has to be clean. People make fun of me. I mean, they think I'm a snob, like, oh, she's clean. Because as soon as anything gets dirty, I freak out in my head. I'm like, oh, God, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I can judge my moods by the cleanliness of my house, if I'm all okay or not. You know, when I'm okay, my house gets a little messy because then I let my guard down. But when I'm not, my house is totally clean. There's nothing, no messes anywhere, because that's actually the time that I'm nurturing myself. When my house is a little bit messy, that's good. That means I'm just being me. I'm not worrying about anything. So, you know, I mean, in itself, it sort of parallels being an addict, but I'm not addicted to alcohol or drugs, but I do know about, you know, where my pain comes from and how I cover it up and how I deal with it in the way that I grew up, the chaos, like you said, the blood, all those things, you know, the messes, my mother being gone for days mm-hmm. and not knowing where she is and, you know, all of that stuff. So now in my life, I need to control all those aspects of my life.
Right. No,
and
exactly.
I suppose that in a way, it's like an addiction, but it, you know, it's, I just don't get drunk or high.
Right. Well, it's just a way of making yourself feel better. Well, at least that's what I've realized for myself, is that when I'm upset, you know, I'll be like, this place is a mess. And then I start cleaning everything. But it's because I'm trying to soothe myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
and I, on the other hand, don't matter. It doesn't matter to me if it's a mess. If it's all clean, there's something wrong. I'm the total opposite of Myrna.
Mm-hmm.
When my house is clean, there's something going on.
Right.
You know? I mean, my house is not filthy, but it's clean enough to be happy in, you know? Comfortable.
Right.
But when
my
house is too clean, it puts me on a high alert.
Wow.
I don't like the clean house bit. No. Because then that means I got too much time on my hands.
Oh, yeah. What is that saying? The devil's something, idle hands?
Oh, idle hands make devil's work easy.
Yeah, something like that. There you go. Oh, wow. Well, we're coming towards the end, but I have a final question for both of you. And Linda, I want to start with you. As someone who's in recovery, and your sister Myrna was trying to help you, and you mentioned that at first you didn't trust her, you know, and she would say she loved you, you'd be like, yeah, whatever, thank you, employee. What advice would you give to someone, another sibling, who's trying to help their addicted sibling?
Take care of yourself first, because you haven't got nothing to give someone else. You can't help them. You have to look after yourself. Like I've had to, I have a son that's an alcoholic. And then just in the past week, I've had to come to know that I can't help him. And I tell him I love him, and I see he doesn't believe me. But I just got to keep it up. You just got to keep telling them you love them. And eventually it'll get through to them that you really do love them. It's not a ploy. It's not a trick. They're not trying to fool you, because they really do love you. And that's where it's coming from, is a place of love. Because if they hated you, they let you carry on and do yourself in. But they don't. They love you. That's why they tell you that. And I sincerely believe my sister when she tells me she loves me. Because I know she does. She stood by me through the thick and thin. And there was awful times that I was awfully mean to her. And cruel. But she stood there and said, I still love you, Linda. And that's what helps a lot. To know that there is a person out there that will support you no matter what. We didn't have that as kids. My sister gave that to me as an adult. And that's the best present I've ever received. Ever.
Thank you, Linda.
That's all I got to say.
Oh, wow, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Myrna, my question for you is all about making peace, because you seem to, you know, I wish that you could bottle it and sell it, because if you could do that, Myrna, you would be a bajillionaire.
Well, it's been a very, very long road, I know that, and without my belief in God, I call it God, you know, it's belief in love that in this chaos of all of it, you know, that is what saw me through, is a belief in love, and a belief in love for myself, a belief in love for other people. And it did start with myself. I came to a place after Annette's death where I said, Myrna, the only thing that's going to ever fix this is love. And it's not up to me to understand some other people's way of dealing with life. What is up to me is understanding my own way of dealing with life and being accountable to myself first. And to go from there, a loving place, you know, and I guess Jesus would be my model, my mentor, because I had to go and read the Bible again and find God in a way that fit me. And, you know, and that's basically what I did was understand that even though I'm faced with struggles, it's not about me. You know, nothing was ever personal. And that was the hardest part to get over, was not taking it all personal, that Linda wasn't trying to hurt me or Annette wasn't trying to hurt me. It was about them hurting themselves. And that if I wanted to help them, then I could no longer stay in a hurt place myself. I had to come out of it. And the only thing in my mind that would cure that is love for myself and love for other people.
Wow. That's so powerful. It's so simple, and yet it's so powerful, you know. We like to complicate things, and it can be, because addiction doesn't come with a handbook. I say this all the time.
No.
We're kind of left to figure it out on our own, but wow.
Mm. Yeah, and it wasn't really a simple process. There was lots of things that happened that showed me I wasn't alone, because prior to my sister's suicide in 1997, I was a very angry woman, very angry, very unloving toward myself more than anyone else. But when all this stuff happened, it's hard to believe, but it triggered love versus anything else, because I guess that was my low point, where I was so full of anger and hatred at alcohol. I thought at first it was all the alcohol, and I thought, well, if we can just get rid of the alcohol, then we're going to be a good family. But that never, you know, that was not going to happen. So it turned back on to me about love, and I was given miracles in my life at that time, as difficult as it was, that showed me that there is love, you know, and that was the answer for me. I can't say for anyone else, but for me it was learning to love myself, and the more love I have for myself, then I can love others.
I agree with that statement, because if you don't love yourself, how can you love someone else? You don't have something to give you don't have. You know, we got to love ourselves and forgive ourselves for what we've done. And I know I've done a lot of bad things, but I know I'm forgiven. Because if I wasn't, I wouldn't be here today. I'd have been dead, along with the rest of the crackheads. And with my family's love and support, and especially my sister's, I'm here. And I'll tell anybody that's listening, you can get here. Just takes a little bit of work and a desire to want to be here. That's all it takes, the desire to want to be here. That's all I got to say.
You know, it's so funny. I'm thinking, okay, we're at the end now. We got to wrap this up. But then I'm thinking, I would really like to sit down with them and have coffee and let's talk about this some more. I mean, it's just, I really do.
Yeah, because there's so many components that went into it, you know,
yeah.
Like our lie, like I'm 59 years old now.
And I'm 62.
Yeah, and it seems like yesterday, you know, I was a small child running around trying to figure out how to cope with all this craziness.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
been my life, coping with craziness, but,
yeah.
You know.
You always sometimes wonder, when is it going to stop? Is it ever
yes.
going to stop? It
yes.
doesn't. And you just got to learn to live with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to learn coping mechanisms that work for you.
Mm-hmm.
For me, what works for me just may not work for someone else, but I do know that I'm at an okay place now. I'm good. If anything else bad happens, oh well. I'll be able to handle it. I don't need
right.
it. I don't need the drugs. Thank God.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, all right.
The biggest thing is self-acceptance. Mm-hmm.
Which is hard to
know
do.
Knowing who
it's,
you are.
Oh, that is,
yeah.
that is, oh my, I look, I'm speechless. It is the hardest thing to do is just to be able to look in the mirror and say, I'm all right with you. You know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I mean, yeah, it's like I can't be a Girl Scout all the time, and I have days where I totally don't like my behavior or things that I'm doing or have said to someone, you know, but I always go back to my place of peace, because that's my goal, is to be at peace with myself and my family. So, you know, I have to say, well, you know, Myrna, you're being a little hard on yourself. Just lighten up and know that, you know, you are loved and that you do love your family.
Mm. Yeah, and the best part is we all know it.
Mm-hmm.
We all know
yeah,
it.
I'm amazed with yeah. such a big family that you have.
You know, actually, I think all the, our childhood brought us, because we were always left alone as kids, and I had to make sure that they were all right. That gave us a sense of being closer than anything, because we were always alone as children without our parents. And parents don't know that today. They got to spend time with their kids, just even mm. sitting there talking. It's so awesome.
Mm.
Thank you.
That's what I got to say.
That's it. You should write a book, Linda. That's what I got to say. Man, all your wisdom.
I've always thought of writing a book. My idea for a book would be all eight of us, or not eight of us, now seven of us, all write our own story and make it one book. I'll bet you we'd have a lifetime of reading.
Yes, you would.
We all remember the past differently. You know, we all remember
yeah.
our past differently. Right? I'd like to know what Myrna's past was from her point of view, what my brother's point of view was, what my other sister's point was, and mine. Let's see where we all end up. That would be an awesome book to write.
There you go.
Getting lost to tell the story.
I would like a cut of that, though, because I gave you the idea, okay?
Yeah. It's a great idea.
All right, well, Linda and Myrna, I just want to thank you again for being part of this. I'm going to say this, and it might sound completely crazy, but I love you guys.
Oh, thank you. Love you, too.
Oh, I just want to give you guys a hug, definitely. But
thank
you.
Oh, thank you. We'll hug each other for you.
All right. You guys take care.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, wow. Another powerful, amazing, insightful discussion with Myrna and Linda, and just wow. Oh, I have chills. So many things that they said are just, you know, so simple yet so powerful, and just awesome. All right, so thanks for listening to this third episode of The Sibling Project, and of course, thanks again to Myrna and Linda for making this project possible. It would not be possible without people like Myrna and Linda and the other people that have participated in this so far. Until next time.